Bill and Calamity Jane are here. And now, so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hey everybody, this is Paul Dennis, speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. Welcome to episode 17 of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. Well, the HBO Deadwood series is over, at least on a weekly basis. And season 3 finished about a month or so ago, and we're all looking forward now to the two TV movies that David Milch has agreed to wrap up the storyline for HBO Deadwood. But guess what? The Real Deadwood is still here. So I guess we need to still have a show about The Real Deadwood, since that's the name of it, The Real Deadwood Podcast. By the way, you'll notice that the intro music is different this time. I've been away preparing for the new school year. Some of you know that I teach at Black Hills State University. I've gone from teaching two classes to five. I was teaching two classes for the last 6 years. So I've been a little bit busy with that, trying to get my classes going and get up to speed. In the interim, I've put out some video podcasts because they take a lot less time. And so there have been some video podcasts about the Deadwood actors and some video podcasts about the town of Deadwood. And I will be continuing with that, but I got so many nice emails saying, what's the deal? Where's the audio podcast? Are you stopping because the show went off the air? What's going on? So, I decided to, you know, come back, and I'm going to keep the audio podcast going. I still have plenty of content, but, and hopefully I'll have some more time now that I'm pretty much prepared for the new school year. But as you heard, the intro music, instead of using my New Age album with the Black Hills Gold music, I decided to switch over to this blues music. This is what I actually play now live when I go out and perform. And this music was some background music that I put together for a video that I was doing. So I decided to go ahead and start using that now for the intro music. It's a little more up-tempo and a little happier. I've got a great show for you today. I'm going to start out with part two of the interview with Robin Weigert that you heard in episode 16. Of course, Robin Weigert plays Calamity Jane on the HBO Deadwood series, and she was here for the Deadwood Shootout Poker Tournament. Then I'm going to be talking to Jerry Bryant from Deadwood's Adams Museum and House. We won't be talking about the Deadwood show, though, this time. We're going to be talking about guns and whiskey here in the Real Deadwood. After that, I've got part one of an interview with a group called the Young Dubliners. They are an Irish Celtic rock group. They played at the Deadwood Jam here 2 years in a row, and my interview was done with them last year when they played. They are a fantastic band live and in concert. They really have a lot of energy, and they play, you know, some this Irish and Gaelic Celtic kind of rock music. You'll hear some of their music here coming up pretty soon. That really goes over well with the crowd. Their fiddle player's name is Chaz Waltz, and he's part of the interview here. Is really dynamic, and he runs around on the stage, and he does a fantastic show. And so does the front man, who is Keith Roberts, does a great job. So we'll be talking to them, and you'll be hearing some of their music. Then we have another episode with Tom and Nyla Griffith of TDG Communications, who they are a communications and ad agency here in town. And she, Nyla, is a city commissioner, and she's president of the Deadwood Economic Development area here. So we'll be talking to them a little bit more. Okay, and then we've got some news from Robin Weigert. She sent me an email and gave me a little bit of a report on what some of the Deadwood actors are doing right now, some of the shows and movies that they're involved in. So we'll hear a little bit about that. And then we'll check out some listener email and hear what the people all around the world that listen to the Real Deadwood Podcast have to say. So here we go now with Robin Weigert, the Calamity Jane from HBO Deadwood. Now, as you recall, possibly from episode 16, we had been discussing how she was inspired to become an actress, and she said she had seen Meryl Streep in Sophie's Choice, and after she had seen that performance, that's when she decided that she wanted to be an actress. So we're going to take it from there. So anyway, how old were you when this epiphany occurred?
I must have been barely a teenager. I think I was 12 or something like that, or 13. And, wow. And it was...
And how many years? Well, I don't want to...
But, you know, there were... Well, if you look back to when Sophie's Choice was revealed, it was released, then that will reveal to you something about my actual age.
Well, I know you're in your early... Let's call it early 30s.
Okay, that's fine by me.
You know, but I did actually see your birth date on some one of these fan sites somewhere.
Well, you know, there are actually, it seems to me, a couple of different versions of my birthday floating around on the internet, which I did not sponsor, by the way, myself. And I will, at this point, I will be coy enough as to say that I won't say which ones, ones of the many now I will align myself with. But, you know, not that I care about these things at all. But
so you went to school on the East Coast. You went to?
I went to Brandeis for college. Mm-hmm. And for graduate school, I went to the acting program at NYU. Mm-hmm.
And so you live in New York City. You're from where? From the D.C. area, right?
I was born in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have been very East Coast. And I'm an East Coast Jew, you know. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about the way that I've been... I mean, I'm not particularly...
Funny, you don't look
I'm
it.
I'm not particularly Jewish in any way, because I wasn't really brought up with much religion or anything like that either. I think my mother decided that the rabbi at the local synagogue had too nasal a voice. You know, and because she's such an esthete, that was it for her. That was the end of our Jewish education. But you know, that's how I, so I grew up sort of with that thing that people have of being sort of culturally Jewish, but without any particular religious affiliation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think there's something kind of interesting about the fact, I mean, I don't know my parents or what, but that I have been recently cast in such a solidly sort of Middle Western, very American sort of way, you know, you know, this role that I have in The Good German, I play also a completely sort of Prussian German character.
You so know, this I'm is a, the next movie of yours that's going to be coming
out.
Yeah,
I did a movie that's coming out in, and I am of German Jewish descent. So the German thing is sort of on the mark, but mm-hmm. I play a kind of major anti-Semite in it, you know. Oh. I mean, I've got a platinum blonde wig and I look for all the world like an Aryan something or other. And it's just interesting. I don't
know.
So
this is a World War II?
It's a World War II thing, and it's set in, post-World War II, just after World War II.
And good Germans, as viewed by Americans, in other words, Germans who were...
Well, it's based on a novel of that same name. Okay. So The Good German is the name of the book upon which the movie's based. And it stars George Clooney and Cate Blanchett. Mm-hmm. And Tobey Maguire has a role in it. And I have a small role, but it's a very colorful little role. It was really quite a plum thing to land. I mean, because it's so different from Calamity Jane. I mean, mm-hmm. And I have scenes to play with George Clooney, who I instantly developed the inevitable sort of crush on. Mm-hmm. It seems like you can't help yourself when you're around him and you're a girl, mm-hmm. no matter, you know, it's like he has an unbelievably charming, and he's so, bright. He's so intelligent. Mm-hmm. And, I actually had this thought to myself, it's too bad you're so inordinately famous, because I would love it if you could be my friend, you know. Mm-hmm. You're sort of like one of the smarter people I've met here in LA, mm-hmm. and I'm lonely for intelligent company, and I would mm-hmm. love to just be able to hang out with you in a coffee shop and sort of shoot the shit, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm missing that kind of culture from New York where you get to hang out and talk. Well, I just, if you end up getting kind of, or I do, I shouldn't say you, one,
we
people can get really lonely without it if you're inclined that way. You know, like you can have all the contact with people you want to, but if it stays very kind of sort of surface, it's it doesn't do you any good.
And she's just such a sweetie pie. I've got some more conversation with her and also with Earl Brown, who was in town for the poker tournament as well. And stick around for that next time, and you'll hear some more from Robin Weigert and Earl Brown. Now I've got some information from Jerry Bryant, who is the researcher at Deadwoods Adams Museum and House. They have supplied, the primary research to David Milch and his writers at HBO Deadwood for many, many years now to get everything accurate, the costumes and the set design and various characters and storylines. And we're going to be talking about whiskey and guns in the old Deadwood. So here we go with Jerry Bryant.
As far as a family that I'm in contact with, and I'm working on the archaeology out there on their site, we're looking at the Lee Masters homestead, and the original home's still there. And that home at the time was a saloon.
Wow.
In Centennial.
Out there?
In Centennial.
Oh.
That was called Centennial Prairie. Mm-hmm. And what
was the population?
30.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 people had their own saloon?
Every ranch had their own saloon.
Wow.
We're talking
for the workers and stuff to.
Well, for
spend
anybody
their
who comes by.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're talking about being on the trail to a major destination, and there ain't that many folks on the trail to these destinations.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Bulldog, Madam Bulldog.
Who's that?
Well, she's a lady that had a saloon down between Rochford and Deadwood, and the saloon was a slightly smaller than this kitchen, but she also owned chickens, and she guarded her chickens with her life, and she had bulldogs.
Oh, okay.
To let her know if somebody was trying to steal her chickens, and so they called her Madam Bulldog.
Bulldog, yeah.
But she was a hooker on the side, and she sold whiskey out of that saloon until her husband divorced her.
Well, I just was reading a thing that, yeah, there were 80 saloons or something when Deadwood was still a tent town, and some of the saloons were no more than two barrels with a board across.
That's right. Anywhere you could sell a product.
And a bottle of whiskey and three glasses,
yep.
And that was a saloon.
That was a moneymaker.
Yep.
And you have to consider what this is all about. Okay, you got a boat coming up the Missouri River. It stops at pier. It unloads the whiskey. There's the guy bright enough on the pier to buy the whiskey and take it to Deadwood. Now, what's the cost of freighting in those days to Deadwood? I mean, you're not only
said to come over the trails, through the hills,
past the Indians. This was not an easy thing, and it wasn't conducive to life.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they got it here, they valued it pretty highly, if they had any sense at all.
Yeah.
Considering
what it took to get it here, yeah.
Yeah. So
it tasted real good to those guys after standing in those cold creeks all day.
Yeah, but I think they watered it down, half water, half whiskey.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you got to make some money.
Yeah,
and a lot of guys did make money.
Oh yeah,
big bucks servicing the miners, mining the miners.
Well, that was the point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was reading the thing also that in 18 whatever it was. Well, I guess it was probably early 1876 when the word got out. Virtually everybody who came from the Denver direction were killed by the Indians before they got to Deadwood.
That's where the Metz Massacre happened.
So they were considered easy pickings because they didn't know what they were doing. They were all a bunch of tenderfoots. It was like shooting fish in a barrel for the Indian raiding parties. And they wound up, and from what I read, all the guns that they took from all these wagon trains were used in the Battle of Little Bighorn.
Well, a lot of them were.
Whatever guns they had amassed by killing all the settlers that were on their way to the Black Hills to look for gold.
Right.
And they just were like shooting fish in a barrel. They just wiped them out and laughed at them.
In some ways, okay.
Until the chiefs finally said, you know what? There's no honor in this. This is too easy. This is not valor. This is not, this is bullshit. And they actually, the chief said, you know what?
Why are we doing this? Let's not even do this.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there were tough guys coming out of Denver who had been down into Silver City, Elizabethtown in New Mexico.
I read a thing about Elizabeth, who the town was named from, who was considered one of the first non-prostitutes to be in the area and stuff. Yep.
And those folks that came out of those mining countries had chutzpah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they had balls.
Oh, absolutely, yep.
They had cojones.
Well, and yeah, the people who believed all the reports about gold laying on the ground coming, you know, at grass at the root, grass root or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, those were people really desperate. And, of course, the fact that all these people were being killed by the Indians probably wasn't reported quite that widely, especially by the U.S. government, who, in a way, stealthily sort of promoted, you know, were
It wasn't stealthy at all. Mm-hmm. It was just...
Come to the Black Hills.
Come to the Black Hills, you're going to find gold. Mm-hmm. How do we know? Well, we sent a general there.
Right.
Why did you send a general there? Because we think it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
He went in with 1,000 men and didn't have any problem. I wonder why.
Mm-hmm. And photographers. And
yeah, I mean, he even had lawyers. I couldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell you need a lawyer for in the Black Hills in 1874?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the point being that the guys coming out of Denver, a lot of them were with previous mining stuff, including the California Gold Rush.
Right.
And also the Canadian Gold Rush. There was a lot going on up there. And most of the people that were of Germanic descent, Germans, went directly from point A to Denver, because there was a huge, huge German population there, just like St. Louis had a huge, huge Jewish population at that time. So the Germans would go there where they're comfortable.
Right, be with their own people.
Be with their own folks, talk their own language, and then the disbursement. You know, it's a diaspora again, just the same as anything. Mm-hmm. Here they are coming up to the Black Hills. Well, the natural way to come up was through Red Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Indians would just wait for them in ambush?
I think they were all honkies that killed them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was an Indian in there.
Hmm. Well, the Indians wound up with the guns, apparently, a certain amount of armament, apparently.
Well, what happened in 1868, the United States Cavalry decided to take their muzzle-loading Springfields and change them into a single-shot rifle. And what they did is they opened the breech so you could put a cartridge in, and then they put in a long firing pin. And most of the old-timers said it was a needle, and they called them needle guns.
Mm-hmm.
But eight men was able to hold off like 200 Sioux with, you know, this new technology.
Mm-hmm.
When the Indians got those by 1870s, holy shit.
Yeah.
And, well, Custer knows, well, knew.
Yeah.
I mean, and
they figured it out.
Yeah.
They didn't need too much people.
No, all you do is you put the bullet in, you pull back the hammer and let it go.
Yep.
That's that.
Well, that would be like aliens landing and us capturing their weapons and going, wow, look at this.
Look
and
at then this
figuring
shit.
It out.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, it was a new thing. And they were in awe when like eight soldiers held off 200 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think they were pissed.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what the hell is that they're using.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
I guess you can hear our glasses tinkling with ice as we were having a little bit of that Deadwood whiskey while we were talking there. So more great information from Jerry Bryant.
Hi, this is Robin Weigert. I play Calamity Jane on HBO's Deadwood. And you are listening to The Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
And thank you very much there, Robin. Next up, we've got the usual little medley that I put together of music from my musical guests. So give a listen to this music, and I think you're going to like it.
Merry month of May, I thought my home was there, and left the girls to jump, nearly broken, had it to salute the father dear. Kissed me there, the mother drank a pint of beer, grief and tears, his mother, and after reap the corn, leave where I was born. Cut the stout that turned the bandage gold, there comes a brand new pair of bros, that lowered a bug, fighting all the dogs on the rocky road, to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hot the air and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, watch for Indiana. To Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Up the hill and turn her down the rocky road. All the way to Dublin, watch for Aldi.
And those are the Young Dubliners, and here is part one of my interview with them. There will be three parts altogether, and so we'll have part two and part three coming down the road here yet. So give a listen to my talk with Keith Roberts and Chaz Waltz of the Young Dubliners. Okay, my guests right now are two of the big guns, you might say, from the Young Dubliners. We have Mr. Keith Roberts.
Hello.
He's the lead singer and front man. And we have Mr.
Chaz Waltz.
Chaz Waltz, who an on again, off again, back again type guy, according
just
to your,
once.
Okay, according to your bio.
Played in the band once, left for a little while, and then came back.
He was missing in action for a couple years.
Well, I acquired tenure, you see. So I could leave for a while. And
was it a tenor or was it a 20-year?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me ask Keith. You formed, well, you're from Dublin, right?
Yeah.
When did you come to the States?
I came over to the States in the late 80s, actually, to
how old were you about then?
I just turned 21.
Uh-huh.
That was my 21st birthday present to myself, getting the hell out of Ireland. And I came over here and was kind of messing around with a degree in journalism from Ireland, so worked with a couple of TV stations, stuff like that, and then realized that was not what I was going to do.
And that was out in L.A.?
Yeah, that was in Los Angeles.
Okay. And then you met, you and Paul O'Toole met
yeah.
and formed the band initially, right?
Yeah, we formed the band just as a kind of a duo to do gigs at the weekend and stuff in Irish pubs in Santa Monica, and then it just... So the more following we got and the more we were enjoying it, we started writing songs and formed a band finally. And then I bought a pub in L.A. And we had the bar, played every Saturday night, and we ended up getting a record deal. And
wow.
We've been on the road ever since.
Now, did you play in bands in Dublin when you lived in Ireland?
Yeah, myself and the bass player, Brendan, actually, we had bands back at home for about, from when we were like 15 to we were 21, we played locally. Uh-huh. And then, so it was always... the plan, just like, you know, your mother always wants you to get a real job, so
yeah,
I had to at least for a couple of years pretend I was trying.
Yep. Well, my parents said the same thing, when are you going to get a job? And you know, I played in bands in New York City and for a lot of places. Well, Commitments, I think, is my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah,
and it was brilliantly done, and you've seen it, obviously. Do you think it portrayed Ireland?
Well, it definitely it portrayed that portion of Dublin at the time. It was to Dubliners in general, we kind of thought it made it look like a real kind of a shitty.
Yeah, I think they kind of dwelled on the.
It's a beautiful city, but yeah. it was based in a poverty stricken part of Dublin, so
right.
That was sort of crucial to the story.
Exactly. Yeah,
to
they were talking about Soul, the blacks of Ireland.
It was a great film, though. We loved it.
Yeah. Well, then it says by 2000, O'Toole was. Was not with the band, and what's he doing now?
Well, in 98, the road is a very, as you know yourself, it's a very grueling business, and a lot of band members over the years, two or three band members over the years have had to sort of step down.
Uh-huh.
So he decided to step down, and we made a decision then to continue on as the five-piece that we are now, and not to, he was a co-singer with me, so you wouldn't really replace him.
Uh-huh.
But we went on, and you had those moments of wondering how we would do, and we've gone from strength to strength, so it's kind of, everything happens for a reason, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, now, Chaz, you're a multi-instrumentalist. You are you're playing the fiddle up there, but it mentions in the bio that you do keyboards and harmonica and stuff.
Yeah, mandolin.
Do you do that live? I mean, we didn't see that here, or do you do that mostly in the studio?
No, I do it live.
For the full shows? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Depending on what songs we pull out, you know, I'll play more keyboards some nights.
I didn't even see a keyboard set up there, was there?
Or yeah.
Was there? Okay.
Yep. I played it a few times.
There. Okay.
And so yeah, but I pull them all out every now and then.
Yeah. Well, that really adds a lot of versatility, no doubt about that.
Oh, thanks.
Now tell me about your surgery that you had, your throat surgery.
I had last year. I started having vocal problems, and we were in the middle of our album, so I went to see a bunch of doctors, and usual thing, found out there was a little nodule on my vocal cord, so I had to get that sliced off. And that was actually right around the time of the Deadwood Jam last year.
Uh-huh.
But so we had to back off a lot of shows for about a month and a half, and then we finished the album, and we hit the road again pretty much immediately in support of it. It's called Real World, by the way, and it's available anywhere. There's a shop.
That's right. Our internet. Talking about promotion here. So do you guys still have your bus? Mm. Is it...
We never owned the bus. We were sponsored by Killian's Irish Red,
right.
So they wrapped the bus for us. But we actually had a breakdown this summer. We had what we call a catastrophic breakdown.
Oh, boy.
Where the engine blew up, and So we had a week left of the tour, and we just kind of did it in vans at that point. But we use buses when we're doing that. Right now we're in the middle of a fly weekend where we fly in, do the show. Uh-huh. We'll leave at 6 in the morning, and we'll be in New York by tomorrow afternoon, headlining a festival there. So it's to this time of the year, it gets a bit nutty, and the bus wouldn't be any good to us.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, we tour. That's usually what we do, is tour in a bus.
Yeah, I had to bring up their bus. It's this huge tour bus, you know, like you see the rock stars traveling in, and all along the side is a huge Killian's Irish Red big ad for the beer, and a huge beer bottle painted on the side of the truck. But when that thing rolled in, like I said, they played 2 years in a row, last year and the year before. And when that thing rolled in and they started to set up, it really caught everybody's eye, and I got to take a little tour of it, walk through it. So they didn't have it the second year here that I'm talking to them. And so I said, dudes, where's your bus? You know, you can check out their music, a lot more of their music, at youngdubliners.com. Also, you can just go to Young Dubs. A lot of people call them that for short. So that works too. If you just type in youngdubs.com, you will go to their website and you'll see Keith and Chaz and the rest of the gang. There's plenty of music there. Their more recent album, the one they're talking about here, Real World, is it's not quite as sort of what you heard at the beginning of this interview, which is very traditional and very sort of Celtic and everything. Their music is a lot more contemporary in their most recent album. You wouldn't, in fact, on a couple of the songs, they just sound like a regular rock group. You wouldn't even know that they were Irish or had that Irish flavor to it. But I kind of like that whole Irish thing going on. So go ahead to Young Dubliners or YoungDubs.com and check out their music. And they've got some other merchandise and stuff there too. Now let's hear some more from the TDG communications people, which is Tom Griffith. Tom D. TDG is Tom D. Griffith and his wife Nyla. And let's hear some more about their adventures here in the town of the Real Deadwood.
And my brother moved here 2 years ago from Minneapolis, and he bought a house for about half of what I paid for my last Yukon. Mm. And loves it here. We ride motorcycles, we go fishing, we go golfing. We have outstanding golf courses. Yeah. Right in this area, three within, a half hour. Yeah. And, what I think's fun is, the recreational aspects we've kind of covered, and they're year round. And we didn't even mention really hunting and fishing and some of those activities.
Hiking, the scenery.
Mountain biking.
And the climate.
Yeah.
Now, not lately, but
well, lately, and you know, summer always comes late to the Northland. And having lived in Montana and the mountains of Arizona, my house there was at 7,000 feet. Here we're about a mile. But what we find is, you take good and bad. And I look at places that I went to 30 and 40 years ago, places like Aspen and Breckenridge and Jackson Hole, and I see, really the Black Hills that far ago. In other words, I think this is that next area, because today with internet and FedEx and UPS and great phone service and cell towers and all that, you can live wherever you want and work wherever you want.
Yeah, and our air situation is getting better.
Oh, well, the air, let me tell you about air. I'll tell you, right now, air service into Rapid City, our gateway airport, just on the eastern edge of the Black Hills, has never been better.
Right.
We have, direct flights daily to Minneapolis, Denver, Salt Lake, and Chicago, soon to be twice a day to Chicago. It's been twice and three times a day to Minneapolis, Denver, and Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. We also have twice a week air service to Las Vegas direct.
Yep.
So you're talking about major hubs, Denver, Minneapolis, Chicago, and the latter being the busiest airport in the world with more flights more often to more places than anybody else. So when you're serviced by four major airlines, Delta,
and
United,
you don't have
Northwest,
to scramble around
Allegiant,
to get here because we have Black Hills San Res.
You're one hop. You're going to hit a hub and you're going to hit here. And you can rent your car from four or five rental agencies at the airport. You can stay in B&B.
From Black Hills San Res. It includes your airfare, your car rental.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You don't even
hotel.
Have to put it together yourself.
Yeah.
One
it's
call and you've got your entire.
It's about
vacation.
As easy as it gets to get here. And I tell you what, having been, Nyla and I have been fortunate in our lives to visit 40 some countries, and recently got back from Paris and London, and we paid $7 for a Coke or a beer, and we take the kids, we had two kids with us, and for four of us it'd be for coffee and croissants it'd be $40. Well, you can take people out for a steak here for $6 or $7 or $8,
yep,
and go to the finest restaurant for $25 a head, and that might even include your wine, and have an exceptional experience.
Absolutely.
Or you can go the other way and go on a chuck wagon.
At First Gold.
Yes.
You could go on a chuck wagon cookout and ride horses to get there, or a hay wagon.
Yep.
So there's this myriad of experiences that are available here. And, you know, as this area has grown, about 3 million people a year go to Rushmore, about 2 million people a year to Deadwood. You have, seen the visitor attractions, amenities, mm-hmm, and services grow right along with that traffic. And, yep, and there's some comfort in that for the traveler.
Now, how many books have you written about South Dakota?
Well, I've either written or co-written, I'm on my 45th right now, and I actually got a contract for my 46th today.
Sweet.
Been writing for Folders and Random House, then Simon & Schuster, Globe Pequot, and a number of magazines and newspapers over the years.
Name some of your books.
America's Shrine of Democracy was my first book about Mount Rushmore.
That's the one with
Reagan in the front? And yes, Ronald Reagan wrote the foreword for that book. And my last book was about six brothers out of the Dakotas who all became coaches and teachers, spent 353 years combined in the classroom and on the field. And Tom Brokaw from NBC wrote the foreword for that.
And what's the name of that book?
That's called A Winning Tradition.
Now, your books are all on Amazon, I would take it?
The vast majority are.
So if somebody searches for Tom Griffith.
Or T.D. Griffith is what I actually write on.
G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H.
Correct.
Then your bookography will come up in Amazon, and people can just go crazy and buy them all. Package deal.
I've sold, I guess, over 500,000 books over the years, and wrote the book, actually, for Random House on South Dakota, yep, for Compass America Guide
which
series.
Which Mary had read long before we even moved here.
Yeah, you know, I've been writing
that a lot.
Yeah. I've been writing for, I started my first newspaper in seventh grade. And worked for newspapers and ended up running a couple in Arizona and Montana, and editor at the Rapid City Journal here. Decided I wanted to own my own house someday, you know. Mm-hmm. So I got out of that business. And since then, I've really tried to write what I want. Nyla and I have been, as I said, fortunate enough to travel a few places. And whether it's a bazaar in Morocco or a castle in Scotland or a beach in the Caribbean, you find uniqueness in each place, and I think there's a little bit of a adventure in all of us, a little Marco Polo, and that's what I really hope to do long-term, full-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, when we talk about books and how that has an influence on the rest of the world, I was recently doing some research on Mike Russell, and I don't know, Paul, if you're familiar with Mike Russell,
no,
but he owned the Buffalo Saloon, which is still in operation on Main Street today. It's the longest continuously operating saloon in Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
And probably
the state as a result.
Yeah, probably. In 1876, he actually came from, he had a lot of different travels, but he ended up in Deadwood. And the reason he ended up here was through dime store novels.
Yep.
And he grew up in Canada and made it as far as Kansas, where he was working for the railroad as a very young man, about the age of 16. And he met Buffalo Bill Cody.
Wow.
And Buffalo Bill Cody, of course, was a huge figure in our history, and as a showman and entertainer, but that was later. And when Mike Russell met him, they were young men, and Buffalo Bill was just making the name for himself as a hunter and a scout and shooting buffalo to feed the men that were working on the railroad. And Mike Russell later made his way to Deadwood, where he opened the Buffalo Saloon, and Buffalo Bill Cody was a great friend of his, and he came to visit him on many occasions here in Deadwood. And there are many pictures of Mike Russell and Buffalo Bill up on Mount Moriah visiting Wild Bill's grave.
Wow.
Of course, they both met him when he was a marshal or sheriff, which was it, in Abilene, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And it was all because of those dime store novels that talked about those legendary heroes of the Wild West,
yep,
that Mike Russell decided that he really wanted to be in this area. Mm-hmm. And he did fulfill his dream and came here. And we see that a lot with people today. They read about Deadwood, or they see Deadwood on the HBO, yep, show, and they dream about it, and they make their way west or east.
And there we go with some more fun from our local Deadwood segment featuring Tom and Nyla.
Now, don't forget, if you are new to the Real Deadwood podcast, you need to go back and listen to all the earlier episodes, because they are not really anything that's going to expire as far as what we talk about, and the vast majority of it is pretty timeless. Interviews with the Deadwood actors, interviews with people here in town, and interviews with the musicians that come and play here in the Real Deadwood. Now I'd like to share with you an email that I got from Robin Weigert, Calamity Jane. I had sent her an email asking her what was going on with her and if she knew of anything that was going on with the other cast members. And she says, "Hey, Paul, I'm in Vancouver right now shooting a movie with Benicio del Toro and Halle Berry called Things We Lost in the Fire. How are you doing? You asked about others in the cast. Paula, I know, is in Hawaii right now, as is Kim Dickens, shooting different parts on Lost. Now, Paula, of course, is Paula Malcolmson, who plays Trixie. Kim Dickens plays Joni Stubbs. Kim Dickens had a part last season in Lost. She played the girl, one of the girlfriends of a guy called named Sawyer in Lost, and it was called The Long Con. He was a kind of a con artist, and what they do is they're all, you know, stranded on this island, but they do flashbacks into the various lives of the different characters, and this guy Sawyer, one of his flashbacks featured Kim Dickens, except her hair was darker and short. It wasn't that long blonde hair that she has when she plays Joni Stubbs, but if you look closely, you can tell it's her. And it'll be very interesting to see Paula Malcolmson, Trixie, in an episode of Lost. Okay, then her email goes on. I'm actually being put up in the room next door to Ian McShane. Of course, he's Al Swearengen. Up here in Vancouver, which is too funny since our placement was totally random. He's on a movie with Renee Zellweger, the name of which I don't know, and we'll be neighbors for at least the next week or so. We plan to have dinner sometime and catch up, but we've both been crazy busy this week. What else? Oh, as you know, Wicker Man just came out, and Molly has a small role in that, Molly being Molly Parker, who plays Alma Garrett. Dayton Callie just guested on that show with Kira Sedgwick, the closer. Dayton Callie plays Charlie Utter, and had a great time doing that, and he played some Amish guy in a movie, and some other thing, too. He and I owe each other a catch-up session soon. Oh, and Kim Dickens, you know, Joni Stubbs, just got a part in a new HBO series called 12 Miles of Bad Road. So I'm happy to say people are working. Earl, you've probably been in touch with, but I know he's got this movie he wrote that he's trying to get off the ground and a million other irons in the fire, too. Plus, the band keeps on playing. And, of course, she's referring here to Earl Brown, who plays Dan Doherty, and his band, Sacred Cowboys. And you'll hear quite a bit of music from them in the earlier episodes of the Real Deadwood podcast. Then she has in parentheses, I feel like I'm describing my graduating class. Anyway, or as Jane would say, anyways, sending love to you and Mary. Drop me a line sometime and let me know how you're doing. Your friend, Robin. So there's a nice email from Robin Weigert, Calamity Jane. Now, the latest I've seen in the news wire and so forth is that in May of 2007, they will start production on the two-hour made-for-TV movies that will basically be the wrap-up for the Deadwood series. And, of course, those of us here in the Real Deadwood, South Dakota, we were hoping it would go five or six seasons, maybe seven, like, you know, The Sopranos and some of these shows that are out there. So, you know, to hear, to read that David Milch was really only ever intending to have four seasons, which would have been bad enough, but then to have it cut to three seasons, you know, was really kind of a bummer. And of course, we really enjoyed the publicity and the press, and the number of tourists having a show with the name of our town, you know, brought here to Deadwood. But, oh well, I suppose all good things must end. And, so we pretty much just have to make the best of it here, I guess. And now it's time for some listener email. I've gotten quite a few emails. Apparently some people think that I'm actually HBO or that I have something to do with HBO because they're sort of yelling at me about why is the show going off and how can you do this to us? And, you know, that's the best written show on TV and I can't believe this would be going off and stuff. And all I can do is email them back and say, you know what? You're preaching to the choir here because I totally agree with you but I'm not HBO and I try to give them the addresses that they can go ahead and try to contact, the proper people instead of, you know, kind of contacting me. And I've had some people that have asked me, is there really not going to be a season four? Please tell me it isn't so. And I've forwarded them various links to some of the articles that are online that explain what happened and what Milch said and what Chris Albrecht said and what they agreed to and all that kind of stuff. But now I've got some other emails here that don't deal with those particular topics. So let me go ahead and share some of these with you. This is an email from a Frederick Johansson. And he says, just a friendly hi there from a Deadwood fan in Sweden. I stumbled upon Deadwood quite by accident from having followed Carnival religiously and read quite raving reviews of Deadwood on TV.com and bought season one on DVD as soon as I could get my hands on it. And I was hooked. The language and stories are phenomenal. And the dialogue is witty, clever, and oh so nasty sometimes. There's almost a Shakespearean quality over the dialogue and themes. It's fucking awesome. And I stumbled upon your podcast quite by accident, too. I read on TV.com that HBO was coming out with a Deadwood podcast and tried to find it. Unfortunately, HBO hosts their podcast at iTunes, and iTunes doesn't exist for my operating system, parentheses Linux. So I tried to find it through other channels, parentheses Google, and found your podcast instead. 2 weeks later, and I've listened through the entire archive. I think you're doing quite an amazing job here. You've given me a good and quite deep insight into the Dakota state of mind and quite a few nice historical facts that I was unaware of. Parentheses, American history isn't really a subject in schools here, so it was a slight case of tabula rasa on my part. By the way, I looked that up in Wikipedia online, and that means a clean slate, so that means he had no previous knowledge of the history of Deadwood just because they never learned it in school. Thanks for the weekly hour of entertainment, although it's not quite weekly, but I'm glad he thinks so. Keep going. I'm going to stick around till the end here. Frederick. So thank you very much, Frederick Johansson from Sweden, for that really nice email. The next email is from Dan Vakulskas, V-A-K-U-L-S-K-A-S, says, greetings from Sioux City, Iowa. I am a fan of the HBO Deadwood, as well as your podcast. I have been to Deadwood twice in the last year, and I'm coming back out there in August. I wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your show. Keep up the good work, and we'll keep listening. So thank you very much, Dan. A shout out to you. Here's one from just Steven. It just says, name, Steven. Message, I enjoy your podcast. It gives great insight to the show and its company. It is only recently that I discovered podcasts and your show. What a great find. Keep up the good work. So thank you very much, Steven, for the nice email. Next, I have an email here from someone named Devi, D-E-V-I. And it says, hi there. I was just wondering why you don't have Richardson represented on your website. I know his name is Ralph Richardson, and he got on just as an extra. He's turned in some great comedic performances. He deserves to be recognized, at least. I know there isn't a lot out there on him, but please at least give him a shout-out on your list of characters and actors. Thanks, Devi. And my response to her is, hi, Devi. The only actors I list on my website are ones that I have some type of content for, either an interview I've done or, in the case of the visiting actors, some video or audio I've captured. So far, I haven't hooked up with Ralph Richardson in any way, so he isn't mentioned, nor are Ian McShane, Tim Oliphant, Molly Parker, Powers Booth, etc., etc. So that's why. On the website, I don't just have a list of all the actors from Deadwood. I have a list of the actors that I actually have either, you know, talked to or have something recorded from. So it's not really meant to be a comprehensive list of all the cast members by any means. And our last one for the day is from Lisa, F-U-S-T-O-N, Fustin or Fustin. I've just finished listening to and watching all the iTunes casts that you have uploaded. Casts, of course, being short for podcasts. I've enjoyed learning about Deadwood's rich history through your production. I especially liked the family feel to your show, with your wife and son as contributing correspondents. Alex sounds like a great kid and certainly knowledgeable about the cemetery. I have enjoyed getting a behind-the-scenes feel of the Deadwood cast. They seem like a fun-loving bunch of people. The kind of people you'd like to have over for barbecue and beer. I am deeply saddened by the HBO news. I can't imagine the reasoning behind pulling out of a great show like Deadwood. It's unusual for them not to stand 100% behind their projects. I'm with you in thinking there is something else going on that we don't know about. I've been an HBO subscriber since September of 95 and have written to share my displeasure at their recent decisions. I guess two-hour wrap-up shows is better than leaving us dangling after the third season, though I must say it still doesn't feel very satisfying. Keep up all the hard work with your podcast. We out here in the ether enjoy you. I'm enclosing my podcast alley vote and review for your info. So she went to Podcast Alley and voted for the Real Deadwood podcast. And when you do that, you can put in a comment. And her comment says, "Thoughtful and entertaining. Paul Dennis and the various members of the Real Deadwood community offer up interesting info about life in the past, as well as great interviews with the HBO Deadwood cast and crew. Absolutely listen worthy." So thank you very, very much, Lisa, for your very nice email, for your vote for the Real Deadwood podcast at Podcast Alley, and also for your really nice comment for others to read. Now, speaking of voting at Podcast Alley, those of you who have been regular listeners of the Real Deadwood podcast know that in past episodes I have had a contest, and the prize has been mugs that have been supplied to me by a member of the HBO Deadwood crew, John Rizzo, who is the head of makeup. So there's an example of things being somewhat time-oriented, and even though I make an announcement every time to go back and listen to the older episodes of the podcast, that there's nothing on that's going to expire or anything, that is one aspect that will expire, and that is if I announced that the contest was going to be for April or May or June or July or whatever, then if you're hearing that particular podcast in the future, hopefully you realize that that particular contest is over. Now, the last contest we ran was actually back in July, and we do have a winner for that, and that is Val Martin. Now, I thought I had enough mugs to continue to be giving out a mug for that contest, but it turns out I don't. My wife actually gave away the last free mug we had. So instead, what I'm going to do is send Val Martin a cap, a Deadwood cap. So she is the winner of the Deadwood cap. Now, I'm going to hold off on the contest for a little while here yet, until I can establish another schedule for the audio podcast. It's kind of hard to have the contest with the video podcasts. And also until I pick up a few more things to use as prizes. I do have another cap to give away, but I'm going to hold off on that until my schedule is such that I can kind of count on when the contest will be. So anyway, congratulations to Val Martin for winning the Deadwood cap. That's it for this episode of the Real Deadwood Podcast. Thanks so much for being with me this time around. And make sure you check out the video podcast I'm putting out. It's going to be about the Deadwood version of the Sturgis Rally, you might say. If you are familiar with the Sturgis Rally, you know that it's a huge motorcycle rally that happens every August here in the Black Hills. As many as 400,000 people come to the Black Hills, and although it's primarily based in Sturgis, which is about 13, 14 miles away from Deadwood, there's a spillover to all the communities in the Black Hills, Spearfish, Lead, Deadwood, Belfouche, and even to Sundance and Gillette, some of the towns over in Wyoming. So I took my camera and I walked around Deadwood on one of the last days of the rally, so there weren't really quite as many bikers as there had been even a day or two earlier, but I think you're going to get the idea of what happens to Deadwood when the bikers invade. Anyway, thanks again for being with me. Until next time, from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.